Let's get out to Zach Bluxom from VanquishTheFoe.com. Zach, how you doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Thank you very much on this funky Friday. Plenty to talk about. This whole thing, as far as you know, your website, your blog is concerned, when it came down to the whole issue of Bronco Mendenhall and the Colorado job, how much mileage did that get as far as just kind of internet buzz?
I think second to conference expansion, coaching vacancies is what, you know, brings the people in from all aspects of the internet to figure out what's going on in the future of the program. So with, you know, with all those rumors that had surfaced first with the Denver Post and then with some other sources outside of that, that Colorado was interested in Bronco Mendenhall and that he had maybe even interviewed there, you know, I just kind of added to the flame and people were really interested. And I think especially BYU fans who maybe have been, if not overly critical, maybe a little bit more judgmental of Bronco this year than they have been in the years past, and seeing that maybe, you know, a news organization reporting he might be leaving kind of brought the chickens home to roost, and man, do we really want this program to move forward without Bronco Mendenhall? I think it caused a lot of people to second-guess maybe some of their criticisms.
Zachary, I saw a tweet go out that said BYU lands Jabari, BYU invited to Big 12, BYU sports canceled by Elder Bednar. Got me excited. I thought you were a funny man. Talk to us a little bit about, do you see Coach Mendenhall wanting or going to take another job after the next season? My personal opinion is he will retire, take a year or two off. Do you see him ending up anywhere, and where do you think he would end up?
Well, I think, and you know better than me, obviously, but, you know, Coach Mendenhall is just, he's tuned differently than most any coach that I've ever been around or associated with at all. And I think with Mendenhall is that, you know, coaching is his job, but he always gets the criticism from the outside and even from the inside of the program that he places football lower on the totem pole than he should, but, you know, he's a very balanced person, and I've always kind of assumed that, you know, if Bronco decides that he wants to do something else, that he will do what you said. He'll take a year off and then maybe, you know, take a defensive coordinating position in a place close to a beach, you know, where he could surf, where he could raise his family, where he could just be the fantastic defensive coordinator that he is, and just kind of not have to worry about carrying the mantle of being BYU's head football coach with all that it entails.
So what you're saying is he's going to end up with Coach Rocky Long at San Diego State and being the D coordinator there and just surf for the rest of his life. I like that. I could see it happen, actually.
So maybe I should add that to the end of the tweet.
Yeah,
Bronco ends up in San Diego with Rocky Long.
Bronco and Rocky reunite. What a tandem that Bronco and we call it Bronky. What a tandem that is. What do you think BYU's chances right now of landing Jabari? Is this something that's still feasible for BYU fans? Is it something that they should still hang their hopes on?
Well, I think everyone from the outside has just said, from the beginning, he had his top 10 and he put BYU in there just because he's a Mormon and he's just trying to be nice to the school that, you know, is associated with his faith. And then, you know, Jabari starts whittling down all these teams until finally, you know, getting close to the decision time and BYU's still on the list. So that, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that BYU would be able to land Jabari. And, but, you know, when you're going against, a Duke and teams like that, it's really tough to pit the West Coast Conference against the ACC. And it's not that the ACC or the West Coast Conference is a bad basketball conference. It's just the West Coast Conference is about the best mid-major you're going to find. But it's not the ACC, and it's not going to be dominated by ESPN coverage. And, you know, people don't talk about Duke and hate Duke and write columns about Duke. Because there's no one to talk to, because no one's interested, they write about it because they move the needle. And I think, you know, Jabari probably sees that. But then again, you know, what Jimmer proved is that you can be the Naismith Player of the Year and play at BYU. And you can play in front of 20,000 fans at the Marriott Center, and you can move an entire culture towards basketball in a way that I don't think it was before the Jimmer era. I mean, considering BYU's a football school and has been for forever, you know, basketball really made inroads in the BYU fandom with Jimmer, and that would even, I think, push it more so if BYU was able to land Jabari.
Zach Bluxom from the VanquishTheFoe.com website. And Zach, I want to ask you, you know, we're talking about BYU basketball. I think that there's still, you know, quite a bit of interest, excitement surrounding BYU basketball. The recruiting class that's coming in, even outside of Jabari Parker, is pretty impressive. And I think it gives reason, people or BYU fans, reason for hope when it comes to the basketball program. And Dave Rose is still a guy that that BYU basketball fans certainly respect and appreciate the things that he's been able to do. Right now, on the football side of things, you know, we talk about this all the time in the, I guess, in public opinion, it's good to be loved. It's okay to be hated. But the worst thing is to have apathy, you know, from your fan base about your program. And it feels like, at least from the outside looking in sometimes, that there might be a growing apathy about BYU football. Do you see it that way? Because you're very closely involved with fans out there as they interact with your website. Do you feel like BYU football fan is becoming a little apathetic, or, you know, where's the interest right now? Is it waxing, waning? Where is it?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Lim. I think it may be a little bit of apathy that's creeped in, and I don't think it's necessarily from the program as a whole. I think there's just been year after year of expectations at BYU that are a lot of times not really able to be met by any realistic, you know, assessment of the roster. I mean, you look back when in 2006 they lost two games and still had a chance, and two games, really, really close, tough games to BCS opponents.
And, yeah, pour some salt on it. Pour some salt on it.
Yeah, sorry about that, man.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. Sorry. Keep going.
I'll send you the... yeah. But, you know, you see how they played in 2007 and 2008, 2009. I mean, they were right there in the mix of the BCS to get an at-large berth, but the circumstances just never did it because, you know, Boise State or TCU or Utah was taking those spots at the very top. So now that those schools are in BCS conferences, you know, outside of Boise State, you know, BYU has a chance to really make a showing and to get into a place where they could, you know, become the BCS busting team in college football, and that they just haven't been able to take that next step as a program to get, you know, not just to be a perennially top 25 team or to have 10 wins a season, but to get to the upper echelon, to get to maybe where a Boise State would be or to where a TCU was before they left the Mountain West. And I think just disappointment, I think, sometimes breeds apathy. But I think that BYU football fans are still as diehard and still as invested as they ever have been. And I think next season, with a tremendous schedule, he got hopefully Taysom Hill's back, and he's fully healthy. Jamal Williams, you have some, you know, if Cody Hoffman returns, you got Ross Oppo, you got a really good offensive unit to work with, and then hopefully they can replace some of the defensive talent that they've lost. And with that schedule, you never know. I mean, there's a lot of great games, a lot of great interest. And, you know, as Taysom moves forward and as the program continues to mature, you know, those dreams of getting to a BCS game and being a perennial top 15 team aren't too far off the radar. I mean, when you think about how much they've how close this season was to being a special season. Next season, who knows? Who knows what can happen?
Talking about disgruntled or apathetic fans, I don't know if you remember some of the comments that Coach Mendenhall had in regards to his dual quarterback system, but he said, like, okay, that wasn't, like, the best decision. In the Jimmer Fredette realm right now, Coach Smart comes out and says and addresses his point guards and asks them, why is it that you guys aren't averaging six assists? Can you can you guys become playmakers? A lot of times they're probably a good shooter in the area. They can drop off a pass here rather than just shooting the ball. It seems like all the point guards in Sacramento have been watching too many and one mixtapes. and Coach Smart's finally saying some things that all the fans have been saying now for a year and a half, 2 years. Sacramento fans are like, there's an unknown here in Jimmer Fredette. Why don't you just give him a chance? And in response, Coach Smart says, I'm going to fight this as much as I can and stay away from the traditional thinking, Smart said. I know they won't like it, but you know what? There are many guys who would love to be in their position. What are your thoughts on this?
I have a difficult time explaining Coach Smart's actions in any way, shape, or form. I don't understand the makeup of the team first off. I mean, you have, like you said, a bunch of N1 mixtape guys out there, and there's absolutely no continuity between any of the team. And then you have a guy maybe, you know, on the bench who has proven he's really efficient when he gets in there in Jimmer, that if he was given more minutes, you know, maybe that would provide more wins. And they just, it's almost like he has this, I don't want to call it animosity because I don't know, you know, the specifics of it, but it seems like that Smart has his way of thinking and that way of thinking won't ever be influenced by any reality, even over a 2 year period. I mean, it's obvious that his system and that his substitution patterns aren't providing wins for the team. And Jimmer is a top 10 draft pick, you know. This is a guy that the franchise has invested a lot of money in and that the fans have invested a lot of effort in. You know, why not see it? It's not like Jimmer, when he's been into the game, has been ineffective. You know, he's been ineffective in the minutes that he's given. And so I think it's just another evidence of the rudderless ship that is the Sacramento Kings franchise.
Yeah. Who needs a runner?
That's a great way to describe them.
That, who needs a runner?
And a dumpster fire is.
Yeah.
All right, Zach Luxem from VanquishTheFoe.com.
You know, they need to just, you know, skip with the names and just start, you know, just making up the N1 mixing, the skip to the lose, the dunk fest guy. I mean, just give them names like that because that's what you're watching at Sacramento.
Well, my man, DeMarcus Cousins can be the reinvention of the hot sauce.
Yeah,
because in more ways than one, that guy, yeah.
Marcus Thornton can be the black hole.
Yeah, I've said this. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's interesting that Smart is the one that complains about the assist ratio. When it's really impossible to get an assist if the ball's stuck in someone's hand for 10 seconds as it goes one-on-one in the post.
Yeah. You know, I've said about DeMarcus Cousins, and thank goodness he doesn't listen to our program. Otherwise, he might meet me in the parking lot here. But, you know, he's one of those guys that he's either going to be an all-star, or he's going to stab somebody in the throat with a fork in a strip club and go to jail for, you know, extended period of time. That's just the type of personality he is. He reminds me a lot of Ron Artest / Metal World Peace early on in his career, where, you know, a lot of his issues had not been addressed as far as being able to deal with some of the things that were going on with him from a mental standpoint. Metal World Peace has done a better job dealing with that. That doesn't mean that he doesn't still have those issues, but he at least has addressed them, owned them, and tried to do what he could to be able to, you know, keep those things in check. But right now, DeMarcus Cousins, in my opinion, be a guy that's completely not in check.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, Cousins comes out of high school, goes to Kentucky, place for Calipari. I mean, those athletes and Kentucky are about as enshrined as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he goes in the top 10, and he just has all this. I couldn't agree more. It's just he's missing some kind of he's missing a nice sit on the couch, you know, with someone who could help him through some of his problems, because there's no doubt he is a fantastic player.
Oh yeah,
when he's feeling it, he could be one of the best scorers in the NBA. But there's, like you said, with Meta World Peace, there's just something that needs to be channeled. It's nothing that really needs to be changed. I don't think he just needs to have something channeled inside of him that could get more out of his talent.
What are you thinking about this BYU-Utah game? Is BYU not as good as the preseason predictions, talked about? And is Utah better than what many people expected?
Well, I'm not ready to crown Utah as back in any way, shape, or form. And they beat a Boise State team that had beaten some good teams. But Boise State was on the tail end of a long road trip. Played a bunch of games in a few days, and I think they were just wore out. And in college basketball, in college basketball, anyone can beat anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a one-game thing. It's a 40-minute contest. And so I'm not ready to claim that Utah is going to have a chance against BYU on Saturday. That being said, BYU has definitely underwhelmed this season, and especially underwhelmed in the context of the West Coast Conference, because the West Coast Conference was really excited to get BYU into the mix. BYU had won 25 straight games and been to the tournament a bunch of straight years. Just had a great tournament with Jimmer, and they get to the West Coast Conference. And last year was kind of had to get into the play-in game to even get into the tournament. And then this year, another down year. Whereas Gonzaga's in the top 10, undefeated, and looking to be not only the West Coast Conference favorite, but a lot of people thinking then they may be able to get to a Final Four with the talent that they have. And so BYU has a lot to prove to the West Coast Conference that they really were the addition that they thought they were. And I think a lot of that comes down to the backcourt play. And a lot of people point to Matt Carlino and that he needs to be better, and he just does. And if he doesn't need to be the guy. I mean, Davies can be the guy. Tyler Hawes has proven he can be the guy. Carlino just needs to be the glue. He just needs to hold the team together as a point guard. And I haven't been able to see that this year. And so I'm hoping that as the game against Utah on Saturday and as the conference season comes into play, that Coach Rose, as he usually always does, can find a rotation that can get the best out of the program. Because this is, I think, going to be his most difficult year in terms of coaching that he's had probably since, his first or second year in Provo.
Zach Bluxom from VanquishTheFoe.com is our guest here on 960 The Zone, the sports leader. And when it comes to the rivalry between BYU and Utah, obviously after next year, then in football it's going to take a hiatus for a period of time, and hopefully they'll get that figured out where that can still be a regular part. But it's going to be difficult with the way conference play is for the Pac-12 and the University of Utah and BYU trying to find ways that they can schedule as well. It's not exclusive to the University of Utah trying to figure out ways to do it. On the basketball side, not being in the same conference anymore with the University of Utah, BYU and West Coast Conference, University of Utah is obviously in the Pac-12. How do you think that this has affected that rivalry, them not playing in the same conference anymore? Are people disappointed? Did it get to a point where when Utah was still in the same conference and just not a good team anymore, that people started to not really care about the rivalry? Are people gonna, are they missing having that competition in the same conference in your mind? What are your thoughts on the rivalry on the basketball side?
Well, one thing that's different is BYU moves to the West Coast Conference and Utah is in the Pac-12 is that they don't play each other twice. Mm-hmm. They don't play each other in a home and home. And so, half of the fans miss out on a chance to see the rival in their home stadium. So I think that, playing only 50% of the time is what you used to, has definitely, I think, put a little kink in the rivalry. And I think in terms of the basketball rivalry, it's interesting because both BYU and Utah basketball have had a cyclical cycle of success that have not really coincided with one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Utah, during the Majerus years and into the early Jack Leddy years when they had Andrew Bogut. I mean, they were the best team in the state. After Jack Leddy moves on, Boylan comes in, then it's Dave Rose and BYU were the best basketball team in the state. And they still are, I think. But, and Utah may be on its way back up, but there really hasn't been a time I can remember maybe outside of, 2007, maybe, where both teams were in a good position. Both teams were going to go to the tournament. And so I think that kind of the lack of consistency from both programs in the same year, I think, has affected people's perception of the rivalry. And even more so, you know, when Utah has so much success in the football realm, what used to be a basketball school is kind of transformed into a football school. And as you see, mm-hmm. the attendance at Huntsman Center has not been anything to write home about. And it's because I think they've kind of focused more on where their success is. And I think, interestingly, when BYU's been more successful, they're, have become more of a basketball school than they used to have been. So there's interesting dynamics in that, but I think people do miss out on having a chance to see both teams play each other twice and have a conference championship on the line.
Talk to me a little bit about what you think in regards to the recent commits in basketball, who you're most excited about. People tend to get really excited about Micah because of his, he's 6'9", solid base and can jump out of the gym. But, I think the sleeper in this group is going to be Hartsock. You saw what Noah did. He's just so much more polished, and you didn't necessarily get hyped up for Noah until, his junior and senior year when you saw just how polished he was and a true basketball player. And then also touch on some of these football commits and who you like out of this group so far.
Yeah, I think I don't think anyone in who cheers for BYU or watches BYU will ever doubt the name Hartsock ever again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Noah Hartsock is someone that came into the program and, was expected, from Bartlesville, Oklahoma. I mean, who is this guy that kind of looks like he's, the church ball all-star, the guy that doesn't look like he can even shoot, and then all of a sudden he has, 20 and 10 on you. And so with his brother, it'll be interesting to see if they kind of cut from the same cloth. With the other ones, a lot of people look at Micah because, like you said, he is tall and athletic. But Nick Emery has been on a lot of people's radar from the very beginning, and I know a lot of national guys who focus a lot on recruiting are just, really high on this kid and that he can handle the ball, that he can run a team, and that he can shoot. And, in college basketball, with the way the three-point line is set up and the way the game is set up, a three-point shot is the ultimate difference maker. And so if BYU can have a guy who can shoot from the outside consistently, they're going to be in any game, even if they are outclassed athletically. On the football side, we just got a recruit last night, the recruit that signed with BYU, Johnny Reagan, I don't know how to pronounce it. But he's a three-star recruit via scout, four-star recruit via ESPN, and he's an outside linebacker, and he was one of the top five recruits in the state of Oregon. And kind of has the same build, same body style as a Kyle Van Noy, and I'm not saying he's going to be the next Kyle Van Noy, but he's got the same kind of features, same kind of body frame. And, if Van Noy decides to forgo his senior year and to head to the NFL, which, if he does, I would do it the same thing probably. This kid from Oregon could have a chance to really step in and maybe be a difference maker, or at least, a contributor from the very beginning. In terms of the other commits on the football side, I'm more looking forward to, there's a pair of defensive tackles that BYU signed last year. Marquise Johnson is one of them. And they both redshirted this season, and Theodore King is the other one. They both redshirted this season, and with BYU losing some defensive tackles and defensive ends this year due to graduation, I'm really excited to see these two kids play. I think they're going to be really good, and I think combined with Bronson Kafusi, I think they could fill the void that hopefully we won't see a difference in the front three of BYU and Broncos 3-4 defense next year, if these kids are as good as I think they can be.
Zach, we've got to cut you loose. We appreciate you spending some time with us. We encourage people to go to vanquishthefoe.com. What's your latest blog and what's on your site right now?
I actually just posted a story today about kind of looking at independence and then whether the cost of independence and the benefits that it has, if they really do outweigh the Big East, and whether BCS access should enter into the variable in what BYU decides to do in the future.
All right, look forward to being able to read up on that. Zach, good to have you on the program. Hope to have you on again soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.